Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Now I just learned that for a long time, there was a ministry in the UK that was dedicated to making horror films for children.
Huh.
It's called the Conservative Party.
No. They were. I watched this fascinating like little mini documentary about them. They were public service announcements, but like whoever was in charge hired a bunch of like film school kids who all wanted to make horror movies, and they made all of these like 90s, 80s era public service announcements. It was probably more 70s through 80s public service announcements. Like horror movies, all filmed like horror movies.
Yeah, like the ones where it was telling you to avoid power substations and somebody was getting a ball and it was cutting them like, no!
Yeah, somebody would like die in every single one. But there was also some that were very high concept. There was one where it was a like dystopian future where they forced children to run across railway tracks. And like over the course of the PSA, like several children die. And the last shot is like just lines of dead children across railway tracks. And I was like, that's an interesting thing for a government ministry to do.
It was the 70s. We were still traumatized from the final embers of Empire, and we were just like, let's just film some stuff.
I was like, I was watching it, and I was like, am I watching something that Johnny Sims wrote? Because that feels like what's happening to me. It's like, oh yeah, you watch one PSA and somebody dies, and then suddenly everybody's dying in PSAs, and then you're in the PSA.
And then you look in the mirror, and you are the PSA.
There it is.
We've got Douglas, you're right now leaning over Hip. You've performed this spell that should slow Hip's bleeding. A enormous turkey and also a very large bird have bowled over the two big owls that are in the fight.
What is this
which
show?
sort of leaves the person who was leading this attack, this person who is time and time again tried to pressure you to giving up the Kessler family recipe, the golden asset of this community, over to the Red Feather Syndicate in exchange for promises of a great growth in personal wealth. With Hip, like at least temporarily taken care of, what do you do?
I think he's gonna sit there and like as soon as that's done, because coming up on the scene, he sees Hip down and just is infuriated at this scene that after all this, he's been civil. He's been as cordial as possible with the Red Feathers. And, you know, regardless of how many times they've, you know, shot off at the mouth or been very disrespectful to him or the community members, he's held his tongue because he wants to, you know, he wants to promote as much civility and peace for everyone as possible. He doesn't want to cause problems for the other members of his community. But for them to have the audacity to just be like, hey, we asked you, you said no, so screw it, we're going to do what we want. His blood is boiling. And he had to take a deep breath and push that aside for a second to make sure that he focused on Hip and, you know, stopped the bleeding, kept him from dying. But now that hip is in a stable condition right now, all bets are off. Like, he just stands up. Once he looks at hip, make sure he's okay, stands up, turns around, and you see him just do that flick with his hands. Both the tonfas just flick out, and he is just slowly walking towards the head guy.
Yeah, so this guy currently, I think, is like pushed back to the ground, if I remember properly from previous sessions. Got bowled over in like one of the wild surprises. It might have even been throwing the chicken that did it.
I think it was being stomped on by giant chicken, giant turkey Travis.
Yeah, I think it was giant turkey Travis that knocked him back.
Yeah. Yeah, Travis, I think, like, Travis sort of, like, rolled through and we'll say sort of overran this fellow, who is now, like, trying to get up to his feet and grab his gun to, you know, fire back at the folks who are attacking him and his soldiers. What does Douglas do?
So as he's approaching, you see him, I mean, his eyes are just almost blood red from, like, the anger, the emotion, the tears. So he's just, as he's walking up, he's staring at him. He's like, "You came into my home. You assaulted my family. I've tried time and time again. I've tried to be patient with you people, but you don't seem to understand. So I'm going to say it in a way that you do understand." And he is just going to take a tonfa to one of the legs, like right at the knee.
Yeah, I think while you're saying this, on this approach, Travis, in overrunning this person and trampling them down, hit a lantern that was like held up on this silo. So the light is sort of like flickering on you and away from you as the lantern is like now swinging. You're just getting like slowly closer and closer to this person through the darkness. And let's have you roll for this. Two yellows and a green against two purple dice. Or actually, a purple die and a red die.
Purple and a red. Do, 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 do. Purple and a red. And you said two yellow and a green?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And roll. Oh, poor boy. Poor guy. So that is going to be one threat, two successes, and a triumph.
Oh my god.
Oh. Okay, so that's at least three over. That is going to be more than enough damage to take this person down. But we do have a crit there. I guess the first question, Bees, do you or do you not kill this person?
Is
one of you inside an airplane?
Sorry.
Is that a train?
Wow, this is the first time that it's come through all the way? Yeah, there's a plane.
It's because you didn't have the food background up. That's what filtered out the sound.
It blocks out.
Actually, though, for my recording, they had us mess with our sound stuff, so
they turned the planes up. That makes sense.
Yeah. Fuck. They turn it. Yeah. It's Baby Shark is a plane in the sea.
Your mic in the Zoom is your computer mic, as far as I can tell.
Oh. Mm. Well, how about this?
Ah. Oh, there we go.
Nice. All right.
Well, is the plane okay?
All right. I'm sorry to break this to you.
It's doing donuts up there. It's fine. It's fine.
So, okay. Getting back. Douglas, do you kill this guy?
I would say no. I don't kill him, but he wishes to God he was dead. I think I think I beat him just mercilessly. And like, he is unable to do anything. Like, arms, legs broken, just he is in a bad way.
Yeah, I think what happens, like, you move in, actually, yeah, you move in and you go for that leg. You get him on the knee, he tries to bring up his carbine to like shoot at you, and I think you break his wrist holding it, and then there is just like a swift flurry of attacks Tanfas are really brutal weapons. They're not ones that a lot of folks think about, like, but they can extend your reach. They can enhance like most physical blows, and they move very, very quickly. It's not quite, you know, a rattan or an Eskrima situation, but it can be brutal. And this person is disoriented and in more pain than he's ever been in his life. I think, Douglas, you are leaving a lasting mark on this person. Everybody who, you know, sees them after this, and probably even for years after this, is going to know that you beat him here today. Mm. What mark is that? What does it look like?
I don't want to get too graphic, but I think what he does, like, after he's done, the dude's like just breathing heavy, so hurt, and he's just going to stand above him and be like, since you don't seem to understand who you were dealing with, let me help you out. Let me give you a little reminder, so every time you look in the mirror, you'll remember the mistake you made today. And I think he's going to carve a stone onto, like, his cheek.
Interesting. I'll meet you halfway, because we're okay. Using a blunt weapon here.
Well, yeah, I would assume he had like a knife on him or something, just because of like cutting rope and stuff or things like that.
Okay, yeah. So go. All right. So you pull out a knife and, you know, make a rough circle, a stone in his cheek. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure from this moment, this guy passes out. That's just taken down. We do have a threat, but I'm going to hold that off. Ooh. For later. Or no, you know what? A threat, I am going to say that that threat happens right now. Ooh. In that there were people who were in the silo itself. Mm-hmm. One of them, seeing this, raises a firearm to level at Douglas. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say, Tyler, Jonnet is going to be able to react to this person to try and stop them from shooting Douglas. But really, how much damage Douglas stands to take from this is kind of in Jonnet's hands right now. So what sort of attack are you doing as you see somebody raise a firearm against your father?
I feel like I haven't used an actual skill from my OG character sheet in ever.
Let's look at the clock. It might be ever.
One second. Boop, boop, boop. Do I have quick draw?
Yeah.
I have quick draw.
There you do.
Woo!
So I feel like the what we see is someone like is getting ready to take a shot against Douglas. Jonnet, who kind of just finished dunking somebody with the
blunt. That's a technical term.
So he's got his Kasarigama in his hand, but he sees this about to happen, and I think he just reflexively like drops the knife end in so he can like reach across, grab his pistol, and just fire from the hip at this guy.
All right. Yeah. Roll it up. I love that. So I believe that is a point blank ranged attack. So I think, and I could be doing the rules wrong here, and I also don't care, as we're probably going to be exiting this system relatively soon. We'll do one purple die. This is an easy attack.
Aww. Oh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there like an in-game mechanic for like this just like exploding a person? Because I got 5 successes.
Holy shit. I mean, so I guess what happens, like, this person is taken out of the fight, Tyler.
Yeah.
But you succeeded, like, with you're just doing so much over the level of success that you need that you can resolve this however you want. Like, do you kill this guy? Do you disarm this person? What happens?
Okay. So what's going to happen is Jonnet is going to, he's going to first fire from the hip. His aim is strictly going for the person's gun. So Jonnet shoots the gun. I imagine it like gets shot out of the guy's hand. The guy looks around in like surprise, sees that it's Jonnet, and then maybe like takes a half step to like head towards Jonnet, and then all of a sudden the earth underneath this person is going to rocket up and then just going to shoot this guy through the roof. He becomes a little plank in the stars and we never see him again.
No, I like that. I think
fair.
I want to add to it, like you draw, you fan the hammer to a fire. Your bullet causes this person's gun to explode. I mean, these are very what in our world would be kind of early 1800s revolvers. Some of the first Colts are not especially solidly put together. So metal fragments go everywhere. The guy, you know, is surprised, but like sort of unharmed. Those fragments didn't pierce him or whatnot. And he turns to see this 15-year-old, you know, and the barrel of their revolver like smoking in the light, and like decides I'm gonna go after this kid still. It is just a kid after all. Mm-hmm. Takes a step for you, towards you, and that is when like the glow in your third eye becomes apparent. There is like a spark. He can see the tendrils of the universe lighting up. And most importantly, he can feel the earth shifting beneath his feet. And that, I think, does indeed launch him through the roof of the building, never to be seen or heard from again, maybe even out in orbit. Boom, gone.
Bing.
He does say blasting off again.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And Meowth does follow him. Yeah, we didn't mention that Meowth was in this scene the whole time.
Oh, if you paid attention, you'd know.
Mm-hmm. One should presume, unless stated otherwise, mm-hmm. that Meowth is in the scene.
I'm always off camera, just okay. Waiting for my moment.
Let's do a hard pivot into just doing Team Rocket stuff, actually.
But also, like, I get Meowth, our Meowth impressions now throw me back to Aaron Keefe's Coco Cashmere, which is is forefront of my brain right now.
let's get Aaron on the show again. I think a hard Team Rocket pivot is exactly what you need for this. Okay. I want to turn, before we go back to dealing with the situation with Hip, Gable is currently, you know, using Griffin training techniques to hold down these owls. But I think it's going to be hard for them to do that alone. I would like to turn to Travis now. Travis, you're Big Bird.
A Big Bird.
No.
A Big Bird, not the Big Bird.
I do think it's important to clarify whenever it comes up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not traveling to try and break into public television. I want to know, was there anything that you can do to help Gable, and do you do it?
Two compelling questions. I mean, I think I can, you know, stomp around, which is, I'm finding, quite fun.
I kind of like the idea. Can we see if you can just like sit on them? You're a big turkey.
I
kind of feel like if we had a full-size turkey and two owls in real life, that the turkey would nearly be able to just sit on the owls and that would be it.
Owls, some owls are big. Are these big owls?
These are regular owls though.
No, these are Griffin.
Okay, okay,
owls.
They are.
Are you saying, do you think that I was just like holding two like regular size owls?
I really do like Gable triumphantly breaking into a fight as like, don't worry, I've got the owls.
Owls
can just grab it.
Owls are tough customers. Okay, so I am bigger than these. Yeah, let's Let's sit on them, baby.
All right, so I think we're like rolling for girth here.
Two little eggs.
Yeah, two beautiful owl eggs. I kind of think this is probably four green dice against two purple.
Yeah, I don't see a sit combat skill. So
yeah, I'm guessing that like we'd be defaulting to brawn in this situation, but using like a Griffin Turkey's brawn instead of Travis's. Mm.
Yeah, that's two successes and an advantage.
Mm.
All right. So I think then what I'll give you, Johnny, is that Travis like sees this situation and like kind of furls up the way that turkeys do, like splays those feathers out looking really big and just rolls in and sits down. And the advantage that I'll give you is that you're also sitting on Gable too.
Hey,
that is sort of the most efficient way to do it.
I don't see why we got to do that. I don't see how that's useful because it takes me out of combat, and that's
This is good for all of the treble crush, human crushing.
No, that's worse. That's much worse.
I need to go pass away. I need to go do that.
Yeah, well, like, there is one red feather remaining. Liz, I could turn to you if you wanted to take out this.
I'm being sat on.
Yeah,
can't do nothing.
Give it back to Douglas.
Scramble. You can scramble. Well, I think like if it's not Gable, what I think happens is this person is just going to surrender, right? The more important thing is over to Orimar. Sure. And there were three possibilities in my mind of how this situation could be handled. One of it could have been Gable trying to use divine power. The other could have been a very risky maneuver from Jonnet using guidance from his eye. But there is also something in it if it is you. We see Hip on the ground, bleeding. There is a gunshot wound. I think, for many reasons, Orimar is kind of an ideal candidate to help. Although you don't really have fine motor control as such in your hands, you do have a connection to your heart. And inside your heart is Dreth's soul.
Mm.
I think you can perform surgery.
Oh, I see. What I was maybe going to do as a float as an alternative is this third red feather in the silo saw one of their friends got turned into mist, another one flung into the ether. This third one tries to run, and Orima's like, oh, no. Whips the arm that has been turned into this like chain of like bony spines, a literal human spine, and just drags him outside, possibly to where Hip is. And I like, because most of the magic that Orimar knows, because I do have a yellow and two green in divine for how my bone shaping stuff works, is essentially dragging life force out of this guy and then putting it into Hip to cure him that way.
Grim.
Cool.
You know?
Yeah.
Cool.
You just got to siphon some of the gas out of him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, this red feather turns to run and then just sees some spine come out of field of vision and just wrap around his upper shoulders and pull tight. And he turns around to look to see who it is. And I think Orimar's jaw has been dislocated by being picked at by giant
birds.
You
did mention that. Yeah.
So, he turns around and sees the dread pirate captain Orimar, jaw hanging loose, just pulling on the chain of his arm, dragging this dude back in. It's bad.
I would like you to roll your divine check then.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is going to be hard.
Sure.
But yeah, moving life force around is kind of the thing that Orimar has gotten really good at. Mm-hmm. Mostly it's been moving from Travis as a, you know, semi-willing victim, but But now, like, actually targeting another person, we're starting to see necromancy in a different way. Until this moment, necromancy has been mostly a thing that has been used to heal people and help people, but we're about to see if it's possible to drain life force from one person.
I'm still helping people.
Put that life force in,
you know, somebody has helped in
you're
this
helping
exchange.
Specific. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
That's necromancy.
My odds are pretty reasonably even here, but we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes.
Right, yeah.
Cool. No, I flub that.
Uh-oh.
Mm. Yeah.
Those are disadvantages. So we have a failure and one threat.
Okay. What I think happens. Orimar, right now you are operating off of theory, mm-hmm. and you're testing that theory right now. Dreth is someone who spent years studying under a master necromancer, learning the theory behind moving life force and using it to affect bodies. And you have had sort of a crash course. You have been trying to pick up a set of tools that you had seen operated and move them yourself. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, you have been doing admirably well in doing that. Not only have you been able to use life force to reactivate the pathways that Dreth had set down for you, you've been able to create new pathways of your own, all pulling from this energy source that is Travis, allowing both you and Travis and Dreth's spirit to all remain alive and intact. But now you're working from a completely different situation.
Mm-hmm.
You are trying to connect one unwilling person to another and pull force from them. And I think in this, you hit your first hiccups. You try to open up a necromantic bridge between Hip and this feather. And I think the energy, like you start pulling out this life energy, and you can see this person, everybody who is able to see this, desiccating before your very eyes. Like their skin starts to sallow, mm-hmm. and sink in. Their eyes definitely bulge out a little bit. They you know, start aging. Their hair grows and turns white. It is a nasty, horrible process. And Orimar, in front of you, you can see the light, mm-hmm. of their energy, like this death bloom coming out. And with that, we enter once again the spiritual space.
Mm.
We can see the blue-green light that is Orimar and his house held up by necromantic cobwebs. And we can see out in the distance, far, far away, the lights that we know as nodes of the cutting stone, suddenly searching for this bloom of necromantic energy.
Mm.
At this time, Orimar, you know you have really just seconds to act before you draw the attention of the stone. Should they fall upon you here and now, it's difficult to say whether you'd be able to mount a proper defense or reconceal yourself. You turn to Hip to try and use this energy through a divine necromantic bridge to heal Hip. And what you find is Hip not being a willing subject in this ceremony, in this spell, does not have an opening for this bridge. There's nowhere for this energy to go.
Mm.
The processes through which Dreth needs to work on victims who, or victims, I say, on patients who are...
Friends.
Yeah, who are not aware of what he is doing. Like, there needs to be a baseline of trust established. If not in Dreth the person, then in Dreth's authority, institution, knowledge, and it's not there with Hip. And so there is a natural defense that shuts down the body to a process like this. You could try and force it through, but you recognize the connection between Hip's spirit and his body is so tenuous already that forcing it through might kill him.
Mm. In that case, because obviously if Hip's soul is fully severed from its body, then the cutting stone gonna get him. And if the cutting stone are being drawn towards a sudden burst of soul energy, then maybe if I can't use it to heal Hip, then I can at least use it as bait to divert the cutting stone from other targets.
Ooh, I like that.
So there's like almost I think we see normally within the soul space of Orimar, we get like a little Shaman King style soul orb with a pirate hat. But I think in this particular instance, it is an actual kind of almost polygonal mesh of Orimar Veil. And he's swirling the energy that he's drawn from the feather between his hands and tries to conduct direct it towards Hip. And there is that wall, that error message that comes up that the intended recipient has rejected the message. Okay. And
Accept the terms. Accept the terms, Hip.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody reads the TOS.
It's an end-life user agreement. And nice. With the cutting stone approaching, he instead just kind of swirls it in his hands and just sends it directly up into the air. And I think that is actually visible to everybody. Almost there is, with Orimar, the physical body standing stock still while trying to process all this information. Their gloved, non-spiny hand just points directly up in the air. And then just a beam of energy and light goes straight up into the nothingness.
Yeah, I want to adjust that a tiny bit. First of all, I love the image of Orimar like whipping his hand spine out and dragging this person towards him. And then this person sort of like convulses and twitches on the ground before going still. Mm. While Orimar is standing completely stock still, and definitely you raise a hand towards the night sky and people can see an energy dissipating. But instead of a beam, I kind of feel like it's got to be a shadow. It's got to be like this greenish blue shadow that hits the night sky. It looks so much like a ghost light, like the fire that the mariner sets along the coast. It burns up in a plume in the sky. It is brilliant, beautiful, and haunting. Hey heroes, it's James, your Game Master, and welcome to the Midroll. I want to thank all of our listeners out there for being patient with us last week. If you did not see on Twitter, Casey Tony came down with a little case of COVID, and so we wanted to give him the time off that he needs to recover. We don't have a ton of resources over here at OSN. We are stretched very thin, especially now, but it's really important to me that I be able to give the people who work with me breaks when they need it. And it means the world to me to have an audience that understands and supports that. Speaking of supportive audiences, I also want to thank everyone who supports us over on Patreon. Without that support, we would not be able to afford to work with the magnificent Casey Tony in the first place. And that absolutely makes Skyjacks a better show. If you like what you're hearing over here on Campaign Skyjacks, please head over to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and consider signing up to support us. That money pays for everything we do around here and makes the show better. In return, you get cool bonus content. We just wrapped up a short series starring Bobby Jean and Braith,
So if you want the inside scoop on what happened to them at the in-between point of last season of Courier's Call, sign up at the $5 level and find out. Over here at One Shot HQ, we are currently working on a piece of bonus content that is not Skyjacks related necessarily, but is really exciting, and I do think everybody who listens to Skyjacks is really going to enjoy it. I expect that to be rolling out in the next week or two. So now is a great time to sign up for Patreon and be ready to listen to that new series as soon as it hits the Secret Archive. Now then, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky!
And at this point, I think it is a good time for us to drop out of combat. Mm-hmm. I think we get to see Gable probably wiggle their way from beneath Travis.
I think they should roll.
Oh,
Gable,
yeah.
Gable does a little cartwheel out from beneath Travis. And everybody is sort of confronted now with the problem that Orimar just struggled to solve, which is there are only perhaps minutes, perhaps seconds. It is unclear before the spell that Douglas cast to preserve Hip expires. And then once again, Hip's life hangs in a very delicate balance. Who wants to step up?
I don't. Well, I feel like it can't be Jonnet.
Yeah, Jonnet, I was about to say, you can't see him.
Well,
yeah.
Here's the thing, Tyler. I had been thinking about this too, because I feel like we tried with Orimar. Orimar didn't succeed. Therefore, I feel like that path is closed to us. There are two options here. One is having Gable try to do angel stuff and heal this person. That is something that Gable has done before. I happen to know what Gable's roles are on that. There's a pretty even chance of success. With you, I kind of think, while Jonnet can't see Hip, cannot perceive Hip, with Jonnet's eyes, there is nothing that can be hidden from his third eye. Jonnet could look through the universe at Hip, and, you know, sort of deadening his own perceptions, basically enter a meditative state where he would be able to perform whatever medical procedure is going to be necessary to save Hip. And I'm kind of thinking that at this point, because we've tried magic once, magic is going to be a daunting check.
Jeez.
But a medical check, something that is, and when I say magic, I mean using divine energy to heal, is going to be a daunting check. But performing a surgery of some kind, that I think is going to be a hard check, which is much more possible. And I, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if there was a moment where, like, John has a chance to, like, hey, everyone's gathered around this empty patch of floor, and also the floor is bleeding, I can deduce the rest. This person Hip is here, and he's under stress and in a dire straits. My medicine is pretty low.
Pretty low. But here's the thing, like, Jonnet, what this is a bizarre way of using magic without technically using magic, because what would Jonnet would be doing? And again, there will be penalties to this. This would be probably getting two black dice to the check. But Jonnet would be using the guidance of his third eye, rolling that arcane check to see how he is supposed to move his hands to bring himself to an inevitable future where everyone is relieved instead of grieved. So, like, you can see, like, okay, if I move my hand like this to sew this up, it ends in a future where everybody is upset and sad. But if I do this to to Jonnet from Jonnet's perception, essentially moving your hands through the air in a way that, like, you're not touching anything as far as you're aware, but to everybody else's view, it would be you, you know, extracting the bullet and sewing up the wound clothes. Like, this is going to be tremendously difficult, but probably not as difficult as summoning enough divine energy in one place at one time to shoot it into this person to completely close up this wound, if that makes sense.
Now, James, mm-hmm. the inner nerd in me wants to somehow, some way, see if there's any possible way I can father son Kamehameha this.
Okay.
Because the way that I was thinking about this is like, John, it feels like to do all of that feels like a lot. And so my thought is like, what if Jonnet like looks through his third eye and can get as far up to like, oh, I can't see hip, but I can see the bullet in hip. And I know that it should not be here. So I need to remove it. And then maybe Douglas gets the other half.
Okay. I do like this. So splitting one check into two checks, I think this is going to be two regular hard checks. One is going to have to be medicine.
Okay.
The other is going to be arcane. That is, you know, you're basically lensing your perception here. I really liked what you said about seeing blood on the ground, because it presents us with like an interesting answer to a almost Ship of Theseus style philosophy question, which is, if a man bleeds on the ground, is that blood still a part of him? And the answer that our universe provides is a resounding no.
Nah.
There is a point where blood gets blood far now. Enough from the body. That's just blood up for grabs.
Five second rule.
I do, as far as the medicine check goes, if you want to split that with me, my medicine's pretty good. I've got a yellow and a green on it. Or if you just want to do it all.
I like you and Douglas teaming up for that. That's pretty cool. This is, I think, a three-person operation.
Or like, if this is more appropriately father-son thing, I can also use my medicine to zip up Oromar's spine.
Gable is always welcome.
Gable's always welcome.
Yeah, speak for yourself.
The captain does have a jaw that's hanging out that I can help with.
We'll start with Jonnet's check. What I think happens is like Jonnet sees this scene and Douglas is there. And I think Douglas, like you're probably like shakily removing the tompas that you have and looking at the situation and knowing that this situation right here, right now, extends beyond your medical knowledge, in that you could probably, you know, do something to slow bleeding or whatnot, but removing a bullet and closing up this wound, like you need a doctor for that. And you just can't do that on your own. And I think you recognize Jonnet on your father's face. You have experienced this. And in a lot of ways, his reaction is similar to yours of seeing something that is truly beyond your ability, but you know it needs to be done. You understand that feeling of powerlessness. And I feel like it is very easy to feel called in to step up when you recognize that feeling in someone else.
Yeah. And so I think with that, I will... So my check right now, let me double check. Is this I'm opening my third eye to see the bullet, or is this me removing the bullet? Which one comes first?
I think opening your third eye to perceive the bullet.
Gotcha.
Is part of the thing.
All right. And so what am I? I'm rolling that against a hard.
Yeah, I think this is hard. You're okay. Trying to perceive what you can of this person.
Gotcha. Holy crap. Mm-hmm. That, I don't think I've ever failed that bad before.
Oh, no.
So that is four advantages, but four threat or four failures.
Oh, holy shit. Mm. So what, what we have here, okay, so you were trying to perceive the bullet and have failed to perceive the bullet. Okay, what this signals to me is that this bullet is kind of a part of this person now.
Yeah.
Like, however Hip was struck, this bullet is not able to be fully removed. What you can do with four advantages, though, I think you can perceive the wound, and in a very specific way, I think you can see every single ruptured vessel as you see blood coming out, and you and the universe recognize that that blood is no longer a part of that person, and therefore it is no longer barred to you. So four advantages, what this is going to do, Jonnet, you know exactly where and how this person is bleeding, which means that you would be able to guide Gable in closing up internal wounds, but I think it falls to Douglas to like do everything externally. What do you say, sort of recognizing this?
Taking all this in, seeing distressed father, takes off his bandana, tries to perceive Hip. There, I think it's one of those things where the more energy, for everything that John has gone through up to this point, all the growing he's done, truly when it comes to like reversing or finding a loophole in this like arcane magic, like the universe is like, no, you cannot see this person. And so he tries harder, and the best that he can do is just, he can see like a concentration of just like energy of just like what would be a point in the divine pathways of the universe at like this one section sort of hovering in the air. And Jonna can piece together that someone is on the ground. There is something like stuck like right here, like, you know, right in the rib cage. But Jonna just doesn't know that that's a rib cage. So what he does is, which I guess doesn't really seem that helpful because like you could just see someone's just got shot, but like he just points to like it's right here. And so he points one down, and then he also points like towards the side to give like an X and Y coordinate and be like, whatever this is, that is where it is.
Well, yeah, I want to point out that Jonnet is again, we were trying to perceive the bullet. Jonnet has failed to perceive the bullet. So what instead Jonnet is seeing right now is the wound, like the broken veins themselves, which to a normal doctor would mean nothing. To Gable, who would heal through divine energy, having the specific instruction of like, it's this vein here that has been disconnected from this vein root here and whatnot, like that is a specific direction to the spell that I think would give Gable a blue die on healing. The thing that will need to happen is Douglas is going to need to actually put in the stitches.
One additional thing maybe to suggest on the roll, since we know that we have more time before the cutting stone arrives to separate body and soul, is that worth an additional blue die because they can take their time working on it?
Interesting. Yeah. Like they technically have the ability to preserve this body a bit longer. I think that is worth another blue die.
Two blue dice for me?
Two blue dice. Two blue dice. Bees.
Yes, sir.
I think we're going to have you make a medical roll here. You're doing stitches at this point, which I think no matter what with Douglas's past, like he's absolutely done stitches before. Yeah. That makes sense to me. I don't think he's probably great at stitches. So what I'm going to say, this is going to be a two yellow die check. Mm. Two yellow dice versus three purple, but with two blue dice.
Okay.
And Gable, this is going to be a divine check.
Oh, I thought I was doing a medical check.
You're both doing one.
Okay.
This is a team effort. So these are two separate actions. You, Liz, are healing internal wounds. What Douglas is doing is trying to heal external wounds. And the bullet, unfortunately, has to be left in there, which is not ideal. but it's
what did you mean by divine?
So a divine, you're using divine magic to heal, and what you're doing is healing the veins internally that Jonnet has pointed out have been severed.
Well, I'm asking, do you want me roll on medicine or magic?
Oh, magic for sure.
Oh, then all right, that's much better. All right.
Yeah. So your Liz, it's hard with two blue dice for you, and Bees, it's hard two yellow and two blue versus three purple.
So I'm rolling. That's three threats, three successes, and a triumph.
Okay.
Like, all right, here we go. That pool was pretty nuts. That's why I was asking if you wanted me to roll on medicine, because all my divine checks are silly.
Godlike, one would say.
Yes. I murdered God and took his dice.
Give me those dice, you divine piece of shit.
That's what all of this was for.
Yeah. Worth it.
What are the odds of that?
All right, so this is a really ugly job that he does, but it's a success and a threat.
Success and a threat. Okay, so we have four total threats on the table. A lot of successes, meaning I think the bleeding is managed. At this point, we know for certain that Hip is not going to bleed out. We also have a triumph here. And the triumph is something that I'm really interested in. I want to put this in Liz's hands. So what you are trying to do essentially with this check is close up these bleeding veins and stop that internal bleeding. But you did more than that.
You did more than what you were trying to do.
What James, did you do?
I have an idea. So what if, because this is divine magic, and we're dealing with like blood vessels and stuff, and like, what if doing this sort of infuses Hip's body with enough magic that Jonnet can start to see him again?
Okay. How do I want this to be? Because I love this. I really, really love this. But it's gotta end up weird.
But like, what if you could just see like blood vessels operating.
Like, I mean, so what you are doing through this, you are using divine energy. You are creating a connection between the universe and this person. And we have established through the flashbacks with Teacher Wei that it is possible to connect a person to the universe without using an angel feather. Mm-hmm. So kind of what I think happens is you, like Douglas shakily sews up this wound, and Gable like is standing over this, and I think essentially taking a power pose here. You know, this is like a divine angel power pose, and we can even see through like the crackling energy of the universe, the flickering eyes that make up the scant wings that Gable's angelic form has rebuilt for itself, like shining a halo over this situation. And Douglas finishes shakily sewing up this ugly but totally functional stitch over this wound. And we can see in the dim lantern light and the divine shining from Gable that after it is finished, like the wound like pulls taut closed, and that feel, and like you can see a little bit of divine glow. And then it looks like the wound opens again. But what you're actually seeing is an eye formed over Hip's side that is an angelic eye, not unlike Jonnet's. It is currently stitched shut.
Oh, no.
Jonnet, what you see, like we were talking about veins and whatnot, what you see is the circulatory system that is now supporting this divine object within Hip's body. It is Hip, sort of, a part of Hip, but it is also just a part of the universe that is not a part of HIP. It's like this faint sort of Schrodinger's cat situation that is two things at the same time.
So do I see the network of veins and like muscle systems, but I can't see like skin and face?
Yeah. Okay. And you see an eye. When HIP is standing back up, you will see kind of an eye and veins sort of like floating in the air.
Hmm. Yeah. So I think that happens, like there's concentration of energy around like the side of HIP, and then I just start to see the shape of a... Wow, there is a... Well, my mic is on now, so you probably don't hear that, but there is like a... Some kind of like the Blue Angels are in town or some shit. just right over one. My house.
I thought you were caught up in your story. You saw something or you heard something.
It was like, wow, man, this podcast is dope. No. Okay, so, and then he sees like a concentration of energy at his HIP, and then there is just this emanating like white, blue, hot light, and he just kind of, he immediately understands like what this must be, and then he just kind of walks up to Gable and, Gable, what did you just do?
Nothing happened, and everything's great. Goodbye. Because Gable knows immediately what happened and doesn't want anyone else to notice because no one knows. There's a lot of people that we don't know, and we don't need to tell everyone's story. So he's just like, he's alive, turned tail, and goes right back to the barn owls and drafts.
Oh, Gable just like scrambles underneath Travis again.
No, not underneath. I gotta take care of these birds now. Everything's fine.
There was something I found very charming about just diving into the big pile of feathers and disappearing.
The collective pile of owl and bird.
Yes. Scotty Jacks.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing. In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com, like Skyjack's Courier's Call, an all-ages-friendly actual play podcast set in the world of Sphere. Skyjack's Courier's Call follows 3 teens as they set out as new apprentices aboard an airship with the Swiftwell Courier Service, bringing mail and adventure across the world. Featuring Drew Merzieski, Palomi Pertap, Aaron Catano-Saez, and Ali Grauer, and using the Cortex Prime system, this show is perfect for anyone just getting started listening to actual plays, and veterans of the tabletop genre alike. Join clever but anxious Kieran, bold, fast-talking Cece, and the loyal and strong June aboard the Red Audrin ship as they sort and deliver mail, encounter powerful magic, and learn the proper skills of an Erinner along the way. Right wrongs, do mercies, and take flight. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. You can stream his short film, Lining, on the Roku channel for free. Just search for The Shortlist, Summer. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at @JohnnyNBriefs or on his podcasts, Bill Buds and Dilettante Ball. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT. You can also find them streaming on twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, OneShot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him on Twitter over at ArnePArrott. You can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at Casey Pony or on his podcast, NeoScum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at FionaPup. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists, and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show uses a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals who were fired by the private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games. And once for our friends ne'er rise, twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.